Well, Chuck, we want to jump right in today, folks. As everybody knows, the shootings that have happened in Ohio, in Texas, and the other
don't
one,
you,
I believe, was
don't
in,
you just
in,
hate having to talk about this?
I hate having to talk about it, but there's no getting out of it. We want to address it, and we want to see if there's some actual solutions, not all these crazy ideas. So we've contacted our friend John Lott Jr. John, for any of you who do not know him, and most of you listening to this show do, John is probably the preeminent leader in gun statistics and gun rules. And John, what is the name of your organization?
The Crime Prevention Research Center.
Thank you. And we'll have links to all that. John, you also, I believe, one of Chuck's all-time heroes commented on you, Milton Friedman.
Mm-hmm.
Milton Friedman said that John Lott has few equals as a perspective analysis of controversial public policy issues. So if you can impress Milton Friedman, then you're impressive.
The only problem was Milton Friedman was a brilliant guy. There's no question about it, as economists go, but he couldn't change the line of dissent from Nixon or anybody else. He talked to all of them. They never followed his advice. Trump's probably more like Milton Friedman than anything. But anyway, John, welcome to the show.
Well, nice to have you here. Friedman actually got some policy things. He's kind of looking back. He kind of regretted a couple things. He during World War II, he had the idea for the withholding tax, income tax. Mm-hmm. And but he also the earned income tax credit is also his too. There are a few things that he has, plus you know, vouchers and things like that. He was pushing those for a long time, but the other two were kind of people hadn't thought of before him, really.
Well, John, we'll jump in here. We had a shooter in El Paso, a shooter in Dayton, Ohio, not too far from me, and we had the shooter in, in Georgia the week previous.
Right, in California, in Gilroy.
Or Gilroy, thank you. Now, the first thing is, when you look at a photograph of all three of these people, they look like triplets.
Right.
It's like they're the same person. They're almost the same age. They look the same. They have similar backgrounds. There seems to be a type involved with it. Is that fair to say?
I wouldn't say generally. The average age of mass public shooters over the last 20 years is about 35. You know, they range anything from, you know, even early teens to mid 60s. You know, I would say,
Well, is it trending down, or has this become a trend where younger guys are doing it now?
No, I mean, I suppose given the number of cases, three might produce a trend, but it's, it kind of bounces around. I don't think there's been any real trend with regard to age. And when you look at race, you have, I guess, about 58% or so of the mass public shooters over the last 20 years have been white. But that's obviously that's most of them. But it's white share of the general population is about 75%. So it's actually, you have people of Middle Eastern descent make about 10% of the mass public shooters, but they only make about 1% of the U.S. population. You have blacks make about 18% of mass public shooters, while they make about 13% of the U.S. population. Hispanics are below their share, so it's kind of whites and Hispanics have less than their share of the population in terms of mass public shooters, and blacks, people from Middle Eastern descent, American Indians, Asians are overrepresented.
So when we look at this, we see that white, and these are predominantly male, but white males.
Yeah, males, I mean, you have like 96% of the mass public shooters are males.
Okay. So white males are actually underrepresented based on the population. But we're being told in the media right now that the biggest threat to America right now is white supremacy.
Right. I was going to ask you about that, John. What is this all about? I mean, this white supremacy thing, I'm not sure. I don't really understand this. I don't know any white supremacists, and maybe that's my own fault. But I'm not sure the average person out there does know one or a number of them.
Right.
What is that all about, and what does that mean? What's underlying that white supremacist thing?
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's more than that. They kind of say they're not only overrepresented by white supremacists, but they're also right-wingers.
Well, that's never true, though. In fact, that's hardly ever true.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, if you look at these, what you find is that about 70% of them really don't even have any political views.
Mm-hmm. So this really isn't about, in a typical scenario, this is right. not about politics, although everybody in politics wants to make it about politics.
Right. Well, I think in part, you know, it's just try to blame the people on the other side of the political debate type of thing. So, for example, I think what happens in part is a few of these are white supremacists, but they're not right wingers. So, for example, I think the media and many of the places like the Southern Poverty Law Center or the Anti-Defamation League now, if you're racist, they want to classify you as a right winger simply because you're racist. So you look at the New Zealand killer, for example. You read his manifesto. This guy, he's an environmentalist. The reason why he hated immigrants was because he was worried that immigrants, particularly immigrants from kind of third world countries, would have lots of kids. He believed that they tend to have more than their share of kids. And he was worried that overpopulation in New Zealand and Australia was harming the environment.
Now, the El Paso shooter, his manifesto said almost that exact same thing.
Exactly.
I read it.
Right. In fact, the first sentence for the El Paso shooter's statement said that he generally agreed with the New Zealand killer. And, you know, the New Zealand killer went on. His ideal country in the world in terms of government was communist China. And I can't remember the name, but he had some English politician who he most closely identified with. And the guy is sometimes described as the father of European socialism. So, you know, it's just crazy to go and he hated businessmen, hated capitalists, was against free trade. You know, it's just kind of nutty stuff to go and say, well, that person's a right wing conservative type. He also said that while he appreciated Trump being linked to white supremacy, he disagreed with all of Trump's political policies. So, and as you say, the El Paso shooter pretty much had the same type of stuff. He also hated companies. You know, it's just crazy.
Probably want universal income.
Yeah, universal basic income. He also said in his manifesto, Chuck, that I'm sure that my shootings will be blamed on President Trump, but my thinking and so on and so forth long right. predates him becoming president. Mm-hmm. Says that right in his manifesto.
Right.
Now, the second guy in Ohio.
Yeah, he's an out-and-out leftist.
Right.
And, he's a self-described leftist. He's a registered Democrat. He's an Elizabeth Warren supporter. And he actually is a strong gun control supporter. Not only did he tell friends, but if you looked at his Twitter account before it was taken down, what you find is that for example, after the Parkland shooting, he was very upset with the Republican senator from Ohio, Robert Portman, because he wasn't willing to support reasonable gun control laws.
It's just insane, isn't it? I mean, nothing connects to anything other, except being ostracized or whatever these guys are. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. How do you nail these people down from a psychological profile? How do you do that?
Right. It's, I mean, I think the general thing is you have people who feel unappreciated, that feel that they're a lot smarter or a lot more desirable than society seems to think that they are. And you have people that plan on committing suicide. You read the El Paso guy's statements.
Well, he threw down his gun the minute one was pointed at him.
Right. Well, he planned on dying. He just, at the last moment, couldn't bring himself to commit suicide. But, you know, it's very common. The point of these guys, they want to commit suicide, but they want to do so in a way that leaves a statement that lets people know that they were here. A lot of the guys who do this, as I say, a lot of these people are completely apolitical. You can't find anything about their politics when you look at it. You know, they just feel like, some of them feel that they don't understand why women won't go out with them. You know, these are real women. And they want to go and get news coverage. So you go and you, the Sandy Hook killer, for example, he had spent 2.5 years planning his attack. He had put together what the police described as essentially a doctoral dissertation, looking at the, among other things, the relationship between the number of people killed and the amount of media coverage. He had apparently graphed out, showing that those people who killed, those killers who killed more people, got more international news coverage. And according to one police report, he thought that if he killed more people than the Norway killer, that was his goal, he could get even more international media coverage. The Norway killer, if you just look at his shooting deaths, had killed 67 people and wounded 110 others. So that was his goal. And while I can't prove it, my own guess is that the reason why he went after an elementary school was for the shock value, that he thought that by killing a lot of elementary school kids, that would help him get even more news coverage.
So let me ask you a question. With all the statistical knowledge you have, what is the difference? As we look back, there was always, we've always had serial killers. You know, John Gacy and the Zodiac Killer and Son of Sam. But we seem to have fewer and fewer, at least we're not hearing about serial killers as much as we're seeing these mass shooters. Is the mass shooter today the serial killer of 20 years ago? And has technology made it too hard to be a serial killer today, where you have to do it all at once to get that fame and to get all that, to get
that
many people?
That's a really interesting question, but I don't think they're really the same. The serial killers really didn't have a suicide wish themselves. They wanted to be around to get the rush from going and killing people.
You know, they wanted the fame in most cases.
Well, yeah, a lot of them wanted fame. Not all of them, but some of them did. But it was more, they got pleasure out of going and killing people. Mm-hmm. These mass killers, though, it's not the same. They want to commit suicide. They feel they're doing it not because they get pleasure out of doing it per se, though. Who knows?
Well, we know from psychological profiling that suicide is an act of violence. And it is an act of violence against the people that you feel are wronging you, your own family, whatever the case is. So it would make sense that in some of these extreme cases, that act of violence has been just blown up by killing a lot of other people before dying yourself.
Right, but these guys are doing it to get media attention. The reason why they pick, you know, these gun-free zones and stuff is they just want to have as large of a body count. I mean, the amazing thing is you look at the diaries or other statements, and time after time when they leave statements, they're making comments like, well, if I can only kill more people than this person killed.
It's a high score game.
Well, it's not just, it's not a score per se. It's a score because they want to get more media attention. And they know that the more people they kill, the more media attention that they're going to get. So it's a score simply in terms of saying, can I get more international news attention than somebody else has got?
Now, I've always railed against the gun-free zone. And I've had people attack me on Twitter this week, hitting me on Twitter.
On Twitter.
Yes, we'll cover that in a minute. But I've had people on Twitter ask me, where's my good guy with a gun scenario at Walmart? How were there no armed people in Walmart that shot this guy?
Right. Well,
let me say something. Since I live in Texas and I do shop at Walmart, I'm very familiar with Walmart's gun control or whatever you call it. There is a sign on the door of Walmart. Unless you're an officer of the law, you are not permitted to carry a weapon inside of Walmart. That's really a fact. Absolutely. So it's in fact a gun-free zone. But this guy started in the parking lot of Walmart. Now, over the weekend, Dick Morris came out with his solution, and I thought it was ridiculous. And that is, he said,
it was Dick Morris. Come on.
You needed to have metal detectors everywhere, and that would stop this. And I thought, yeah, right. In a Walmart parking lot, when you're walking through the door with a loaded gun shooting, a metal detector is not going to help you at all.
Right. No, I agree with you. You just had a metal detector at the Gilroy.
A guy went through the fence.
Right.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, the Aurora Batman movie theater shooting, you had people checking purses and stuff to make sure that people didn't have weapons there. And the guy came through a door at the back of the movie theater. Look, these guys are planning these attacks 6 months, a year, 2 years, in the Sandy Hook killer case, 2.5 years before the attack. You give somebody that much time to go and plan these attacks, they're going to, if they're going to pick a particular, venue, they're going to figure out a way to go and get a weapon into that place, or they're picking another venue then.
I don't want to spread something that's not true, but this is what I heard or I read or something. So maybe you can clarify this for me. The guy who shot up Dayton had his sister with him in the car.
Right.
And he shot his sister and killed her, too.
Yeah, that's true. One of the first people killed.
Okay. The guy in El Paso had a friend, from what I understand, who drove with him to El Paso from wherever he came from, 100 miles away. Now, have you heard that?
600 miles. 600 miles.
That he had a buddy go with him, but I don't think this guy participated as far as I – we know so little about what's happened after this guy was caught and the police are, talking to him. But it's just odd that they've, if this is true with the El Paso shooter, they've got other people involved that aren't really involved. They're just passengers, like friends going to a concert. And I don't know whether, I don't know what to make of that. I thought that was really.
Well, I don't know anything about the friend in the El Paso case, but the sister.
That's just what I heard. It could be, it may not even be true, but that's right. What I heard.
Right. But the sister, you would have thought that she would know something about her brother. I mean, they're driving in together to this place. Does exactly. She not know that he has the rifle there? Does she not know that he has all this black gear that's there that he's going to get into later on?
Right. How do you miss that?
It just, maybe he has it all in the trunk and she just didn't see it. I have no idea, but it's weird that the sister didn't seem to know about what was going on. Otherwise, I assume.
Well, we'll never know because he killed her first or among the first.
I don't know. Apparently, it wasn't the first, but
the among the first, said, though.
Right, among the first, like the one first three people that were shot was his sister. So,
and this was all outside a venue, right? Because I've seen a video of him chasing people down the street and into a place. They were running from him, and then he shows up, and they apparently have gone inside somewhere.
Yeah, and I want to talk about how much damage that guy did. Chuck, let's take a quick break right now. We're going to go and hear from our friends at Blue Emu.
I've been-